Welcome to 24 Karis. I'm Kelly Johnson, the founder and CEO of Karis by KJE. We are currently in a series where we're talking about mental health awareness and its connection to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and just overall well-being at work. Our special guest during this series is Brittany Cannon. She's a licensed professional counselor with years of experience seeing clients one-on-one, also working in corporate settings around employee assistance programs, and now in a learning and development role with an organization. So Brittany, thanks so much for being here. Thanks for sharing your perspective about just DEI and mental health. I really enjoyed our last conversation.
Yeah, me too, yeah. Me too.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about, let's get to the D of the DEI, okay. Right? The diversity component. And this is really your area of expertise, but you know, I've read that certain communities, certain demographics, it's kind of like mental health is taboo.
Very.
Right? Mm-hmm, and very. Certainly seeking professional help
sure.
is like a whole nother level of like, we don't do that.
Sure.
So talk a little bit about that, like what is that thing? Because there may be some people here who are listening or watching this that they don't even know that certain communities think that mental health is taboo. So let's maybe break that part down first.
Sure. I think that it, you know, especially in communities of color, it is very taboo. And it's opening, right? And I think there's more of a conversation around it, but it's still not widely discussed. And I think that's really unfortunate. I think there's this pattern of what happens in our home stays in our home. It's no one else's business. And I think that keeps people really sick and really tied to their trauma, stuck in shame, stuck in guilt. It doesn't do anything to foster growth. And I think that when that happens, it is internalized, and when it's internalized, that's when we begin to get the somatic issues, body aches, headaches, weight loss, weight gain, hair loss, those kinds of things, or we're externalizing with the anxiety, right? The yelling, the screaming, the fussing, those things, right? The stress, the inability to manage situations. And so, and for some, it's depression, right? Where they turn inward, feeling like they have no one to talk to. But I think that trauma bonding is what it essentially is, that we're connected through our trauma and that's how we stay there, is a gross injustice to our communities because we don't grow, right? And it puts a lot of onus on the individual that was on the receiving end of the trauma to make it theirs, right? And to deal with it. And it doesn't open it up to make the situation any space for healing, right? And so, and I think that protective nature of what goes on in our house stays in our house, and that just fosters continued trauma.
Wow. Okay, so like what is trauma bonding? Because I feel like that was a very clinical term that I certainly don't fully appreciate.
Sure. So trauma bonding is we're connected through our trauma, right? We grew up in the same household. We experienced maybe domestic violence or in food insufficiency. We're connected through our trauma. We're automatically connected. But how we respond to that bond, right, is up to us. We can heal from it. We can continue to harm others, right? We can continue to live in that manner of this is what's expected. But we're always going to be connected because we have that experience, right? And so trauma bonding can be really unhealthy at times. It can be healthy if we both say, you know, this is an experience we both had, but we grew from it. We're connected. I get you. I get why you respond like that. I get why you feel the way that you do. And I see you healing. Like, that's amazing.
Wow.
Right. And so those bonds, just like any other bond, right, are connected through our experiences. And so the trauma bonding is huge. Everyone has trauma. Right. And mostly it's from childhood. Right. And how we connect to that. But those bonds, it's OK to break them, too. Right? And it's okay to say that even though you respond this way, I don't agree. And I respect you for your space and how you respond. But for me and my boundaries, this is what I need. Right? And it's no judgment towards you.
Right, right. You're doing what you need in order to be healthier.
Healthy and whole.
So I want to almost kind of deviate a little bit, but I'm curious, what is your, and I have known you for a while, but I don't know if I really know fully, like, why. Why did you get in, why did you want to become a therapist? And I'm just curious if the community historic perspective and mindsets around getting professional help when it comes to mental health, if that played a factor.
Absolutely. And I think that even as a therapist at times, I still have to check myself, you know, and what I share with people and, you know, the shame, right? Or feelings of, oh, maybe that's too much to share, right? But I'm fiercely protective of people that I see struggling with mental health. For me, how I became a therapist, I knew that I was always interested in people, dynamics, thought processes and patterns, what makes people act the way they do. So I started out, got my undergrad in psychology to learn, right, how the brain functions. And then I, mental health for me, I've always had this connection to alcohol, substance abuse. I watched a dear family member struggle with that. And she went to inpatient rehab. And I went to visit her and I was like, this is it for me. This is where I need to be. This is what I want to do. And so having that connection there and being able to not only support her, but at the same time, it helped me realize my dreams and goals too. I had kind of run from it for a long time. And finally decided to go back and get my master's degree 12 years after I finished undergrad. And when I did it, I knew it was the space for me instantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you say that, I do remember that story. Mm-hmm. And I do remember just that click for you. Yeah. And even just the courage and the faith that it took for you to go back to school after, you know, being out for a little while.
Sure. A long while.
Yeah.
It's me. A long while.
It's all relative.
Right?
It's all relative. But I remember I was just so proud of you back then for taking that step. And I mean, look at you now. You're making such an impact on people. But I do think that connection to why we do the work we do, and even the life experiences that we bring to it, you know, I think it gives us that appreciation for how we can support people, including those that we work with. So I'm going to now kind of bring it back to like organizations or maybe people leaders, people who have teams. You know, what is the organization's responsibility when it comes to understanding either like how different communities view mental health? Like what, because everybody may not have that perspective.
Sure. I think it's not making assumptions, but also being aware that there are differences, right? And discussing it, asking an individual, I think is the best way sometimes to find out, you know, what they need when they're struggling. And just having those honest conversations as opposed to making that assumption, because that's where we usually get way off track, right? Is when we just assume and go with what we think would be best, right? But I think the key is to continually talk about it, right? Continually make space for it. Continue to make various benefits for the employee to have to reach out and to really connect with their mental health, right? And not being afraid of stepping in if you see someone else struggling, right? It's not snitching. It's not, you know, in that fear of retaliation or that you're going to hurt someone, because I think it's always better to err on the side of caution, right? And just connect with people, because sometimes that's all it needs to be is that connection to know they're seen, to know they're heard, to know they're valued. But I do think it's really, really important for companies to not only just speak about it, but practice it as well.
Yeah. You reminded me of a story, a situation with a friend of mine whose manager basically did what you said. Mm-hmm. The manager recognized that this employee was not in a healthy place.
Sure.
And ultimately was like, you can't come back to work yeah. until you start therapy.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, don't come mm-hmm. back. I don't want to see you mm-hmm. until you go and focus Absolutely. On your mental health and Absolutely. What you need. And I've personally have had a manager really during one of my pregnancies was like, you know what? I think it's just time for you to not
sure
not be here.
Yeah,
you know there was a lot going on. It was a difficult pregnancy
sure.
and it was mental and physical,
sure.
right? But I have thankfully had people in my career who kind of draw the line in the sand,
absolutely,
and say, hey, there's some things that I'm seeing. I'm concerned about you. Absolutely. I care about you, and I think the tragedy really is. Unfortunately, with suicide rates that we're seeing, kind of mass shootings and or even if it's not a mass shooting, but we see so much anger, right, on flights and in
sure.
public, you know, in a grocery store, people
Absolutely.
Getting in a fight over things. And
I
just wonder, like, are we taking the time to intervene and check on people to the level that we should? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to add to that.
Yeah, I don't think we are.
Yeah.
I don't think we are for a number of reasons, right? We're all caught up in our own worlds. And two, we don't want to offend anyone. We don't want to say the wrong thing. A lot of people feel like they don't know what to say. But 9 times out of 10, just saying something is enough, right? Acknowledging it is enough. And so I think that is really important,
yeah.
really important to people because, again, it's the loneliness factor. It's the loneliness that people feel and the isolation that keeps them from being able to engage and feeling like they're not important enough to do so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, the pandemic had a huge impact on
the whole world.
Absolutely. But then we also dealt with other crises around, you know, diversity. And
sure.
I think there's this report by the Washington Post that talked about depression and anxiety spiking among Black Americans after George Floyd's death.
Mm-hmm.
So just quickly before we wrap up, maybe talk, it doesn't have to be George Floyd,
sure.
right? It could be a number of things.
Sure.
But how do issues that happen outside of the workplace impact us at work?
Absolutely.
Maybe talk about that.
You know, I think it's many factors, right? When we see those things, we feel targeted, right? If we don't know how our employers and our coworkers feel about us, right? Do you share those thoughts? I know you have this political thought, right? Does that carry over to this, or am I okay, right? What do you feel like? What do you feel about me? And I think now we've gone through phases, right, in society where it was obvious, right, and very open, discrimination, right, colored, and right, and separation. And then we've had this mixing, right, again, and then now it can be very polarized. And the interesting thing is it becomes polarized, covered in political nature. And so there's the assumption if you're on this side, you're this way. If you're on this side, you're this way. As opposed to having conversations with people. And it's difficult to do, right? Because if I feel like you're one way and I'm this way, we have nothing in common. And so there's no point in having a conversation, right? But we don't want that reciprocated to us, right? We're doing the same thing in essence, which is really hard. But I do think that there is this unrest, this underlying unrest, right? We have, like you said, the shootings, the various things that are happening. Our schools are changing for our children, you know, just life in general. And so I think that in the Black community in general, There's this weird conundrum of acceleration. We're seeing a lot more Black people in higher positions, right? Corporations, but then we're also seeing this disparity too, where there's more poverty in the Black community. And so we're losing this middle ground, right? And it's becoming more separate. And I think it is even happening within our own culture, right? And so that is another layer of that piece as well. But I think it's very difficult to feel targeted just because of the way you were born and who you are as an individual. And that stress of not being understood in the workplace or in just in general in life can be very heavy.
Yeah.
And it can lead to that isolation, the loneliness, the depression, the anxiety as well. So I think, you know, I always welcome conversations from my employer about who I am instead of making those assumptions. You know, and my current manager, she'll ask questions. I'm totally fine with that. You know, I would have rather that than you make the assumption about who I am. And some things, you know, you may generalize that I relate to in a certain way because of what you see, but that may not be me
right.
at all. And so, and I think it's important to have the conversations. Don't act like it doesn't exist, especially in the workplace too.
Yeah. And I think the thing that I'm taking away is, you know, I mean, you've certainly highlighted some things that are happening within the Black community, but I also, you know, we hear about, you know, the rise in anti-Semitism.
Sure.
So
absolutely.
If you have someone on your team who's Jewish, not making assumptions about maybe what they're thinking or feeling or experiencing, but asking those questions.
Absolutely.
And just checking on people.
Absolutely.
We clearly, with the pandemic, saw an Asian hate rise that's still there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it's violent. You know, mm-hmm. we're seeing, you know, there's one thing to have kind of political ideology or beliefs. There's another thing when violence is added into the mix.
Absolutely.
And we are seeing so many other dimensions and dynamics to what's happening. And I think the piece that I'm taking away from what you're sharing is we can't assume mm-hmm. that because someone is of a certain perspective, or we think that they're of a certain perspective, that they're automatically going to believe this a certain way or behave a certain way.
Sure.
At the end of the day, it boils down to we have to have conversations and we have to build relationships.
Absolutely.
And we can't make assumptions mm-hmm. about people. We have to take them at face value. You are a human being first.
Right.
And all the other aspects of who you are make you who you are. But I need to learn and I need to build the skill where I can get to know you on a very human level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's how we learn, right? And there's so many factors. You know, we have sexuality,
yeah.
you know, gender orientations, which are can be mutually exclusive. And I think a lot of people think that one influences the other, and they don't. And there's a lot of things in our world that are very present and in our face, whether we want them to be or not. And I think the best way to manage that is to learn, right? And that knowledge brings power. And learning about people brings an awareness that we grow and understand each other. That's all we want at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
Just to be understood.
To be understood. Something we talk about a lot here is, at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
everybody just really wants to be loved.
Exactly.
If we just distill it down, and love may seem like, ooh, weird. Like, why are we talking about love at
sure.
work?
No.
Obviously, workplace love looks
right.
different than home love.
Absolutely.
But I think if we could just walk into our interactions with people, recognizing people want to be seen, understood, as you said, and those are all symptoms or byproducts of loving people exactly
yeah.
where they are. We're human, we're flawed, and so our ability to love, our ability to see and understand is very imperfect.
Yes.
But if we can at least make those efforts and those attempts, we will be going a very, very long way.
Just be open.
Yeah.
Right? And you may not agree with what someone does, but that doesn't mean that they're a bad person.
Right.
Right? And so I think leading in that way of being open, it goes a long way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. This has been good. Thank you, Brittany,
absolutely.
For just educating us. I learned a new term, trauma bonding, and I think you're giving us a lot of perspective on things that we need to be thinking about as we're kind of all navigating mm-hmm. a lot of internal and external pressures and dynamics. So thank you for sharing
absolutely.
Your wisdom.
Absolutely.
All right, this has been a great conversation about mental health, how we can support people from different communities that might have a different perspective about mental health. This has been another episode of 24 Karis, where we help you live out your commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion 24/7. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast series and share it with your colleagues.